Support for WPR comes from Lawrence University in Appleton, a national liberal arts college and conservatory, offering an engaging global education with funding for internships, research, study abroad, and more. Lawrence.edu.
Support for WPR comes from Isthmus Partners, an independent asset management firm offering comprehensive financial planning and tailored investment solutions for clients nationwide. More at isthmuspartnersllc.com.
The following program is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, filling in for Tom Clark, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor. We're here to spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office with much better wait times, I should say. We'll talk healthy living, we're going to walk through a tasty and usually healthy recipe, and we'll get to some of your emails and some of your phone calls as well.
Does that mean I'm virtual and I'm not really here?
You look real to me right now, yeah, although I did see a flicker. I saw
hard,
a flicker.
Hard to say, it's right.
All right, if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we will discuss a few healthy living topics, Zorba.
Right. We're going to talk about your brain, how to keep from getting demented, or Alzheimer's disease, interesting research on the Mediterranean, and a diet called the MIND, M-I-N-D diet, so you can see what to do to keep your brain working. And then we're going to talk about socializing, the importance of socializing to a longer lifespan, especially with people who are older. And I think we all realized the importance of socializing during the time of COVID. You know, how difficult it was. We weren't with people. You know, we were with them virtually. We didn't get to hug them and see them. Big issues.
Big issues indeed. And what is our special recipe today?
Well, it's not your mother's egg salad. Believe me, it is egg salad tartine. If you love egg salad, and I do, when you want to have you want to have some good egg salad, this is it. Did your mom make egg salad for you?
She made egg salad sometimes. And at first, I remember not liking it a whole lot, but I started to get it. Now, lately, I love egg salad.
See, you know, following your mom's way. But she didn't make this recipe.
Not this one.
Is egg salad tartine. You'll love it.
To the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's welcome a caller now from Norman, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba. I had a question regarding some of the issues that I have been having.
Mm-hmm.
What started happening was every time I would eat, like, red meat or beef, I started having a lot of bloating. Now, after a few, I guess, months, what started happening was, like, after any meal, I started getting bloating. I am in my 40s and at a healthy weight. So I'm not sure, like, I've been trying to modify my diet
to
eat more veggies, but not been able to get to what is causing that these issues.
That's got to be really bothersome. I mean, bloating, nobody ever likes to feel bloated. What do you do when it happens?
I haven't been able to do anything with it. Like, one of the things I started doing was trying to, like, take apple cider vinegar, like capsules.
Sure. Good try.
They work sometimes, but not that much. I mean, I don't get, like, acidity or things like that.
Got it.
It almost seems like I'm allergic to certain foods, but again, I've never had issues with it. I tried looking at, like, gallbladder issues too, but again, haven't had, like,
how are your bowels? Are you having any diarrhea or constipation?
No, I have not.
Excellent. Okay. Any other dietary changes that have gone? Any medications that you've taken that are different at all in the last few months?
No. I have been taking, like, gabapentin. I also have endometriosis pain, but again, this seems more like dietary.
Right. Okay, I've got a very specific suggestion for you, because what you want to do is you want to reset your microbiome in your colon. Carl, when was the last time you thought about your colon? There's the answer to Carl. He doesn't need energy. There's the answer. You know, when we talk about colon, nobody really thinks about their colon.
I don't even think about my semicolon, actually.
That's your semicolon.
No punctuation jokes? Too soon for that?
No, it's too soon for the punctuation.
Sorry about that.
But your colon is a repository of a lot of bacteria, gut bacteria, that we find are more and more important for our health. So I would recommend that you go on something called the FODMAP diet. F as in Frank, FODMAP. Look it up. There are certain vegetables that you follow. And they have to do with the way these vegetables basically are metabolized and what ends up in our gut. And quite often, it's the fermentation in our colon that is actually causing the bloating. And if you kind of reset it, believe it or not, kind of like kickstart it, restart the computer, sometimes you can get rid of the bloating. So I'd recommend you look at the FODMAP diet for about 2 weeks, basically resetting your colon and then slowly introduce some of the other foods. So I think a better way to do it is a natural way, and I think FODMAP is really the way to go.
Okay. I've heard of it, but I'm definitely going to research it more and start that.
That is exactly right. Well, thank you. Thanks for sharing that. You know, we have a lot of bloaters out there. Believe me, Carl's now smiling. He's smiling. He's thinking about all the bloaters he's met in his life. But we do. We have people. Bloating is a really, really, it's a really common problem. People talk about bloating. They talk about gas. And these are really due to colon problems with the microbiome that we're just beginning to realize because, frankly, we have never studied poop. I mean, poop is not something that science has really studied. We've just thought of it as waste products. But in fact, it's not just waste products. These are commensurate organisms that live with us. You know, they make vitamin K because we can't make vitamin K. And it turns out they do much more for our gut than we think about. So FODMAP is the way to go.
I definitely agree. And since you mentioned there's like that gut-brain
Right,
as well
right,
too.
Right, exactly.
So I'm definitely
exactly.
going to look it up and start that.
Right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You take care now.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
A lot. Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413.
You know, if you pay attention to your bowels, you will pay attention to your life. And you can put that on a slogan, wear it like a little pin on you. I'm paying attention
to my
bowels.
Put that on your gravestone right
there. There, you've got it.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime and leave us a voicemail. And maybe you'll be on the show. Who knows? Let's get to our first topic. And Zorba, we've talked a lot on this show about the Mediterranean diet, the king/queen of all diets. You love it, but why are we going to talk about it again?
Well, it's really even more interesting than before. So you've got the Mediterranean diet. If you're not familiar with it, look it up. It's plentiful fruits and vegetables. It often actually consists of some wine with a meal. That's really actually part of what Mediterranean diet, if you end up drinking any alcohol at all. It's fish once or twice a week, preferably twice a week. And then there's something called the DASH diet. So the DASH diet was the dietary approach to stop hypertension. And this is a diet that's been around maybe for about 30 years, looked at sodium, amount of sodium in there, and looked at a different way of an appropriate diet. So there were a bunch of neurologists that got together and they talked about the MIND diet, which is basically the Mediterranean DASH diet for neurodegenerative delay. Big issue. The real question is, what they're looking to see is whether or not the MED diet and the DASH diet combined will make a difference in terms of Alzheimer's. And, you know, Alzheimer's, nobody wants to get it. So, Carl, have you heard about plaques, amyloid plaques?
Not at all, no.
You see, you're not of that age. But anyone of that age will be thinking of my age. I'm an old guy. I'm 75. Well, think about amyloid. If you've read anything about Alzheimer's, you see that amyloid is something that's deposited in the brain, and we believe that that is the sine qua non of Alzheimer's, that that's actually producing it. And Big Pharma has been looking for ways to decrease amyloid in the brain to see whether or not if we got rid of amyloid in the brain, excessive amyloid, because it's something we actually use in our body, that will make a difference. So they've looked at about 800 people, rather 581 people, who scored highest adhering to the Mediterranean diet and what they called the mind diet, to look at amyloid and whether or not amyloid in their body made a difference. And it turned out that people who ate the highest amount of green leafy vegetables, now we're talking about 7 servings a week. Now, it doesn't mean you're on a rabid diet. A serving is like a cup of greens. But 7 servings a week had the smallest amount of plaque formation in their brain, as evidenced by the functional MRI scans that they looked at. And then people who ate the fewest amount had the most amount of amyloid in their brain. So the bottom line here is that the med diet doesn't just reduce heart attacks, doesn't just reduce strokes, but it may actually reduce dementia. And dementia is a big issue.
Sure.
I mean, it's a big issue. We can't tell if somebody has Alzheimer's dementia because the only way to do that is actually to look in their brain. But we know that as we get older, dementia is an issue from Alzheimer's, something called Lewy body, and vascular dementia, which are little strokes in the brain. The bottom line is eat your veggies. And the other part of it is only 30% of Americans eat their veggies. It's still a tiny, small amount. And for a lot of people, French fries, which really are not the best vegetable in the world. I know you're kind of shocked because I know you like your fries.
My 4-year-old daughter is going to be upset to hear that when she listens to this show.
Exactly it. But green leafy vegetables are the way to go. Put it more in your diet. Maybe put it in your smoothie in the morning, and you may be able to remember where you left your car keys next year.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. That's the number to call anytime. Let's go to a voicemail now. This is a listener from Wisconsin.
My question is, how do you find a vitamin or supplement regimen as you're getting older? How do you come up with a plan for that? What are some of the recommendations? And just where do you go to come up with something that'd be good and healthy? Thank you.
Well, you know, I've really been kind of anti-vitamins for many, many years, because if vitamins are an excuse not to eat enough fruits and vegetables, it's like, forget it. You're not going to get it through vitamins, because we know that fruits and vegetables have lots of stuff that we don't understand. And vitamins are a manufactured thing. They're manufactured by an industrial process. Doesn't matter if it says organic, Nature's Way, Happy Valley, Happy People. It's still manufactured. Now, I mean, the vitamins themselves are regulated by the feds. They're regulated under one key issue. But supplements are not regulated by the feds. So it's very confusing. I mean, you're taking a vitamin, you know, with supplements, and it's got some beta carotene. Well, does the Fed regulate that or not? Well, the answer is we know vitamin B6 is regulated, but beta carotene, I'm never really quite sure. My answer to vitamins are this. Number one, fresh fruits and veggies. We just talked about it. 7 servings are even better. Variety, the more colorful the vegetable, the more vitamins, the more minerals, carotenoids, and flavonoids are actually in the vitamin. Number two, go cheap, go long. So you get a multivitamin that says USP, 100% of your minimum daily requirements, and you're getting it. Use a store brand because they're cheaper. They don't cost very much at all. You can easily get 365 vitamins. I looked online the other day for like $15. So it doesn't cost anything. That's what I recommend for vitamins. Just a plain multivitamin with air. If you've got problems with macular degeneration, then you've got to get a vitamin with lutein in it, L-A-U-T-I-N, because that's really very important. And then get your other vitamins from your food. So make a good fruit smoothie in the morning, put some, a lot of different things in there, and you will get more vitamins in that than you will get in your capsule.
Now, Zorba, are you a smoothie guy? Do you eat
no,
a lot of smoothies?
I
you
do
don't.
Not
Never?
Eat a lot of smoothies. Well, I got to tell you something. You know what I like if I'm going to use my calories? A chocolate malt. So that's
you could throw some kale in there, couldn't you?
Oh, God. That's my smoothie of choice. When I think about the calories in a smoothie, I'd rather have a chocolate malt. I do like smoothies, but I don't make them. And you make smoothies?
I make them. I try to make them every day.
What do you put in your smoothie?
I usually put some spinach. Yeah. There's like this big, you know, mix of greens. Which
Go ahead.
Like
what
spinach,
kind of greens?
Yeah. Kale.
Yeah, you have it in the morning?
I usually have it in the afternoon, actually.
In the afternoon?
Afternoon, yeah. Uh-huh.
What do you put in to mix it, like yogurt or milk?
I usually don't put yogurt in there. I put lately I've been putting tomatoes in there, which is kind of, I know, kind of doesn't sound good. But
No, I like tomatoes.
It makes this weird little,
A tomato smoothie.
It gives it, my stomach's rumbling right now, just thinking
So you're going to bring in your recipe. We're going to do it on the air.
That'd be great, actually.
Tomato smoothie.
Tomato green smoothie.
I'll even try it on the air. Let's do it. Tomato smoothie.
Okay.
Got it.
That sounds good.
Maybe it'll move me into the smoothie universe.
All right. 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's hear again, you love hearing from them, your favorite backseat drivers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Here we go.
What are they called? The Grammar Police. All right. Today's quibble comes to us from a listener.
Quibble.
Yeah, quibble.
I mean, I can hardly spell, you know, quibble. It's one of those Q words.
It's a fun word,
you
quibble.
Know? It is a fun word. Let's quibble
it's
about
cute.
This.
This is from a listener named Larry, who for all
Isn't
intents and purposes.
Isn't that a dog food, quibble and bits?
Yeah, it is actually.
No, it's a comedy show. Quibble and bits.
It's a good bit right there. All right, this is from listener Larry.
My dog would appreciate that.
Yeah. Does your dog listen to the show?
Nobody barks at the TV.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
This is actually from the Salt Police.
The Salt Police,
yeah,
got it.
They're tough. Larry writes, "Hello, I'm wondering whether Dr. Zorba might have made a mistake on a recent show when he answered a question about nutrition labeling of sodium. While I'm not an expert like Dr. Zorba is, in my humble opinion, when a food manufacturer lists the amount of sodium on a nutrition label, they're talking about the amount of elemental sodium, not the amount of salt, as Dr. Zorba indicated. But in any event, the whole issue of salt and sodium is an extremely important one, and I've heard one expert say that salt is the number one dietary cause of death in the world. So, a question I would like to ask is, why can't we get food manufacturers to reduce or eliminate the amount of salt they add to foods in the same way we eliminated trans fats from foods?"
Oh, that'd be a great idea, but nobody would buy the food. We love salt.
We love salt.
We love salt. And we've established ourselves to liking more and more salt. When I was off the grid for a month in Nepal and Tibet twice, hiking, we didn't have much salt at all. I mean, because the food that we ate were basically dried foods. I mean, that's what we had. And I came back to America. Everything tasted salty to me, too salty. Yeah. 1 week later, tasted just normal to me.
You recalibrated.
Well, your body just, just adjust to that. So the reality is we like salt. Now, as for the nutritional labeling, that is a good point. I don't know whether or not they really are, when they say sodium, they're really talking about sodium chloride or sodium. I do know one thing. Less than 2,400 milligrams of what's listed as sodium is what we're supposed to take. And whether or not that is only looking at the sodium in the food or the sodium and the chloride is a good question that somebody could look up on the net and maybe fill me in. So maybe the fill me in police will actually do that and let me know. Because as you know, I don't Google. I don't look at things when I'm on the air, and I don't have the answer to that. You know,
it's true, listeners. There's no computer in front of Zorba
right
now.
There's no computer in front of me except for my white matter and gray matter. So thank you very much. The answer is yes. By the way, Campbell's and others are, then they produce low sodium soup. But guess which sells better, like on tomato soup and chicken soup? The low sodium soup or the regular sodium soup?
I'm guessing the regular?
Absolutely, yeah. 100%. Because unless you're actually trying to reduce sodium, it actually becomes a constant problem. And the other issue is this. It's prepared foods that have the sodium. So if you cook, you get to put in as much salt as you want to. And that's why we have to go back and start cooking more in America. You go in the average grocery store today, and especially a grocery store that's more, upscale. As you walk in the store, the first thing they do is they have prepared food, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've got lasagna, Chinese food, and Mediterranean food.
Right.
And guess what they put in all that food when they don't label it? They put in salt.
Yeah.
It's unlabeled, but it still has salt.
Are you salty about something Zorba said? Join the ever-growing grammar police force. Send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls to come, more listener emails, and we'll be cooking up a tasty egg salad appetizer kind of sandwich thing, all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX.
X.
Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number to call, 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. But before our next call, let's do the recipe.
Okay. Egg salad tartine. So why don't you tell our listeners what tartine is?
From what I understand, and I didn't know this until, I don't know, let's say yesterday. Tartine is an open-faced sandwich that originated in France.
That's right.
That's the TLDR
now,
version.
Have you been to France?
I've been to the Paris airport. No, I've not. But I'm going to France in a few months, actually. Southern France.
You see, Southern France. So yeah. You can get. But you've had open-faced sandwiches,
yes,
right?
For sure.
I mean, that's what they are.
I love an open-faced sandwich.
I mean, open-faced sandwich. So yep. What kind of stuff do you like on your open-faced sandwich?
I like avocado on there, maybe with some sliced tomatoes on top of it.
Sounds good.
Maybe olive oil.
Did your mother ever make an open-faced burger sandwich in the oven?
Maybe only if we didn't have enough bread.
I've got to tell you something. It's not this sandwich. But my mother would put a little mustard on a bun,
okay.
Put hamburger meat on the bun, and put it under the broiler, and then the last minute add some American cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. It was the big thing in the 50s and the 60s. It was like the special meal because everything was kind of crispy, and I occasionally made it for my kids.
That sounds
and they
awesome.
Remembered. That has nothing whatsoever to do with our sandwich today. This is egg salad tartine. This is not your mother's egg salad. Now, my mother made egg salad all the time. Your mom made it periodically?
Periodically, yeah. We'd have it once in a while.
Yeah, I would make it all the time. And I periodically make it. So this is a great variety and sort of an old recipe. So you start out with 6 large eggs.
Now, when you buy eggs, do you get like the cage-free, free-range, line-caught, terror-free, like all those?
Terror-free eggs. Eggs that are turf. No, I just buy. But anyway,
sorry.
Since we are making egg salad tartine, start out with 6 eggs. Next, 3 tablespoonfuls of mayonnaise of your choice.
3 big T mayo of choice.
What do you buy?
I usually get the lighter mayo. I'm not a big mayo person.
Oh, you're
all.
Not a big mayo person.
I don't like mayonnaise that much. No.
I think there is a difference. I've made homemade mayonnaise. It kind of, you got to do it just exactly right. And it does taste richer than store-bought mayonnaise, but it's sort of a pain to make. But you need 3 tablespoonfuls of the mayonnaise of your choice. Now, pepperoncini brine. So you've got to buy pepperoncini. You get it in the pickle section of your store. Tablespoonful of pepperoncini brine.
1 big T, pepperoncini brine.
And a tablespoonful of diced pepperoncini.
All right. 1 big T, diced pepperoncini.
And a tablespoonful of minced parsley, preferably Italian parsley.
Big T, minced Italian parsley.
A nice rib of celery, which is trimmed and diced.
1 rib of celery trimmed and diced.
That's right, diced. Nice small dice. 2 tablespoonfuls of diced red onion. You can use any onion, but red onions look better.
They do look better.
Yeah. Do you ever buy white onions?
Once in a while, yeah.
They're just a gentle flavor.
A little milder.
A little milder. 1/4 teaspoon of smoked paprika. Preferably smoked paprika, not regular paprika. There is a difference. Regular paprika will work if you buy a good Hungarian kind, but smoked is best.
1/4 little T smoked paprika.
And then, of course, S&P.
There you go, S&P.
So boil your eggs. Now, in a medium pot, fill it with water so it covers the egg. Place it over high heat. When the water comes to a gentle boil, set the timer for 10 minutes and then take it out. Make sure you put it in ice cold water right away, and it's going to be a little jammy but not runny. And so you can do it that way if you want to really make a really, really good egg. You got to time it. You've got to do it right. There are other ways, by the way, to also make boiled eggs, and I highly recommend you look at it so that it's got the yolk just the way you like it. So then in a bowl, dice the boiled egg, add the mayo, add the pepperoncini brine, the pepperoncini, the minced parsley, celery, red onion, paprika, a few pinches of salt and pepper. Mix it, adjust the salt to taste, spoon it over some toasted bread. I can just taste it now.
That sounds
great.
It
will be delicious. A little maybe sliced tomatoes on the top of it would be kind of nice. And then you've got to use a really good bread, maybe a little baguette.
Ooh, I like that.
And maybe you have to go to France in order to get the baguette instead of someplace like Panera or your local bakery. But anyway, it's good. Egg salad tartine.
Sounds great. Now, where could we find this recipe?
Well,
pictures of Tom.
You can go to our website, zorbapastor.org, zorbapastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us through Facebook.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's go to the phones now. And here is a caller in Dubuque, Iowa. Hi.
Hi. Thank you, Carl, and thank you, Dr. Zorba, for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. How can we help you?
Hey, I got a question. I'm 67 years old and, like probably many people, trying to fight against the scourge of type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing weight loss diet. I've lost about 23 pounds.
Wow, that is really good. That is really good. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent.
Thank you. And still have about 35 to go, Dr. Zorba, so my work's not done.
The never-ending problem of weight in America, where calories are cheap and easy to get.
Well, you can say that again.
You bet.
The question I have, I've been on a statin for a long, long time now. I was on simvastatin or Zocor mm-hmm. for probably 15 years or so, and then all of a sudden, my body evidently didn't like it, and mm-hmm. I was developing cramping and an elevated CK level, was mm-hmm. it, or something? Anyway,
yeah,
I had severe cramping and had to go off of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like doctors just love their statins.
Uh-huh.
And my primary care doc said, yeah, you'll probably be intolerant to all of them. But anyway, I am on rosuvastatin,
uh-huh.
which I think is maybe one of the more potent one or most
mm-hmm.
potent ones.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And
right,
but
there.
I just take it twice a week, and I'm on the low dose, 5 milligrams.
Uh-huh. How's
Sunday
it working?
And Wednesday. Great. My LDL was like 70 something.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So
well, let me tell you some interesting things about statins. So, first of all, we have other drugs that lower cholesterol. A drug called the Stimby, which is part of a combination pill that Merck produced, called Vytorin, lowered cholesterol in a different way than a statin did, but does not have the evidence behind it that statins have. Statins really have good evidence that they not only lower cholesterol as a marker, but they also appear to reduce the inflammation that happens in our arteries that actually can lead to strokes and heart attacks. And that's why you're right. Doctors love their statins. And even a small dose of statin every other day or 2 days a week can often get rid of the symptoms people have, and then you can stay on it. And you've got diabetes, so you're at risk for heart attacks and strokes. Wait, now I've got a question. What are you taking for your diabetes?
I just got put on metformin.
So before that, you were not on anything?
No. My doctor mm-hmm. said that my A1C was below 7. I think my highest was like 6.8.
Gotcha.
And he says technically that's controlled or something.
So let me tell you, metformin still is the drug of choice. There's some issues with another drug that's recently come out called SGLT inhibitors. They're very different. It's a different way that the drug works. There are three or four drugs in that class. Canaflozin is one of the drugs that's in that class. But anyway, metformin is inexpensive, cheap. It's been around for about 30 years, 35 years. It really is the drug of choice as long as your kidney function as normal, and it really does make a difference. So taking that every day and diet and exercise, you're doing everything right, and statins every other day. Are you eating 5 servings of fruits and veggies a day?
Well, trying to. I just had a bowl of fruit and about half an orange, and the veggies I probably could improve on. I mean, I'll have salads and try and get veggies in, but sometimes it's just like a couple servings.
So you really, I mean, as a diabetic, the real risk with your diabetes, when we look at it, there's the blindness risk. There's a risk of kidney dysfunction. You have a risk to your kidneys, kidney failure, and your risk of heart attack and stroke. And it all boils down that you reduce that risk from a variety of colorful fruits and veggies. So my recommendation, in addition to that statin, look at your diet, find some way to improve it. See if you can do maybe a green smoothie or something in the morning. See if you can get more of a variety of fruits and veggies, and ultimately that's going to make a difference. You're 67, that's not old by today's standards. If you do it well, you've got a good chance you're going to get 20 or 25 years more on that body that you have. And fruits and veggies are the way to go in addition to what you're doing.
Well, then, can I safely say, Dr. Zorba, that I'll be able to enjoy listening to you for 20 to 25 more years?
Yeah, I'll be here till I'm 105, let me tell you.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, you take care.
You too.
Zorba, we'll just prop you up and you do the show.
I can see it's Saturday Night Live. I'll just hobble on the phone. You'll just wheel me in. Yeah. Right.
Weekend at Zorba's. 800-462-7413 is the number to call. 1-800-462-7413. Let's do a voicemail. This is a listener in East Aurora, New York.
I worked with someone who his family been in food preparation for 3 generations. He told me once that what they've done with processed food is they split a molecule. I thought he said a sugar molecule, so that it tastes good on the tongue, but when it gets to your stomach, your digestive system, it's incomplete and makes us want to eat more, even if we are already full. Do you have any idea whether this is valid or not? Again, this fast food industry is going to kill us. I hope they go after them like they did the tobacco industry. Thank you very much. Great show.
Well, the reality is fast food is killing us right now. I mean, the reality is it's not good for us, and we eat it all the time. I mean, it's something like 3% of the population goes into McDonald's once a week, some enormous number. And if we add on McDonald's and the other burger places, it's probably up to 8 or 10%. And it's high fat, high sodium, all that stuff. Now, whether or not they're actually changing the molecule, the real issue is that if they add artificial sweeteners, Nutraceuts, sucralose, stevia, any of the, quote, sweeteners that don't have any calories, the real question is, it goes into our body, we eat them, but it appears not to really satisfy the desire to have food. So it doesn't actually reduce calories that we actually consume, because we consume them somewhere else. If you look at a diet soda, as diet soda came in, we got fatter and fatter, heavier and heavier, overnourished, as we say in Wisconsin. And that's because all the stuff that they put into fast food does not satisfy us. And so we want to eat more calories. That is a theory. But I don't think the molecules are actually manufactured so they put a desire into us to eat. I think it's that as we have the taste and we like the taste of sweet, salty, and fat things, we just go, we want more of that, and we just end up eating more. There's no doubt that the fast food that we eat, I think, and the soda that we drink is actually trying to get our brain to eat more fast food and more soda, because all you have to do is look at photos of school-age kids in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, 2010, 2020. You can draw the graph. Something like 30% of the kids in this country, between 20 and 30% of the children in high school, elementary school together, are overweight or obese. And if you look back at the time that I went to school in the 50s, it was only 5%. Hmm. What's going on? Manufactured food, not good for us. Cook at home. Know what you're putting in your food. You will live better.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, Zorba, and my 8-year-old son, we try our best to not, they're always, you know, both my son and daughter, they always want to go. Of course, we're driving somewhere. They see the fast food place. Yeah. Please, please, can we go? Right. And we try our best to not do it, but every once in a while we indulge in that. And just the other day, my 8-year-old son, he was kind of getting whiny and whimpery about something, and he said, "Dad, I haven't had fast food in weeks." Is this stuff addictive? I don't know, man. Is there something to that? I'm not sure. It's pretty funny. 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Call anytime. Leave a voicemail for the show. But before the break, Zorba, we love when our listeners chime in to lend their tips or expertise to the show. So let's hear a few tips. The first tip came from a listener named Diane, who writes, "Zorba, on a recent show, you talked about research indicating that cold air greatly reduces the ability of the nose to produce an immune response. I hate to burst your get-rich-quick bubble, but there is already..."
I made so much money on that, let me tell you. Oh, so much money. I know.
He's wearing a tuxedo
actually. I sell warm air. And, you know, people for years have been trying to get warm air into their nose, and I'm the guy. I'm the guy. I've got
Isn't that Spaceballs where they open up cans of fresh air? And I was like, fresh air. Anyways, Diane continues, "I hate to burst your get-rich-quick bubble, but there is already an invention to warm the air around the nose. Grandmothers have been promoting it for generations. It's called," drumroll, "a scarf. Pull one up over your nose and see how much warmer the air is.
That's right.
They come in all sorts of fashionable styles and colors.
I love it.
Maybe your grandma would even knit one for you." Thanks, Diane. That's great.
Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness. We have lots of scarves. Do you have scarves around your house?
We got some scarves laying around, yeah.
I've got a whole bunch of scarves.
Too many scarves.
We never get rid of too many. Too many scarves, not enough time. That's what we say.
All right. Let's hear another tip. Finally, Zorba, this is a tip from Carol, who lives right here in Wisconsin. Carol writes, "Using tap water to flush sinuses is a huge no-no. I recently read an article about someone who used tap water, and they ended up dying after contracting an amoeba that went directly to their brain. So tap water is not as safe as we'd like to believe. The instructions on the neti bottle specifically say use distilled water."
Yeah, well, they say use distilled water. You can use tap water. If somebody got amoeba in their nose from tap water, it came from somewhere else, because tap water does not carry amoeba unless you happen to be in India or another area, which is, you know, someplace in India where the water actually is not as purified as it should be. Now, there is calcium in tap water. The reality is distilled water is okay. You got to go to the store. You got to get distilled water. You got to pay for it. You've got to bring it home. The reality is tap water will have, certainly in our area where I live, a little bit more calcium. It is totally safe to use. So I disagree. And there's no amoeba in our tap water at my house.
We have disagreeing with the doc. Let's do a new segment, Zorba, disagreeing with the listener.
Oh,
you disagree with
got
this,
it. Disagreeing with the listener. Disagreeing with
Thanks, Diane and Carol.
Singing is not my strong suit. That's okay. That's right. Listening.
We need Tom and his harmonica right now to back that one up.
You got it.
Do you have a helpful tip for the show? Just post it on our Facebook page, or you could always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org, or, like you said, through Facebook.
More of your calls coming up, more of your emails as well, and we'll tackle another thought-provoking topic, all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number to call, 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. But before our calls, Zorba, There's a new study touting the benefits of being social.
Being social. So what did you miss most during the time of COVID?
I guess being social. I mean, you know, seeing people.
Yeah. Right. Seeing people. Think about it. There were people in nursing homes who couldn't get hugged, people in the hospital. But also, you just didn't see your friends. You weren't socializing with your friends. And I think during that time of COVID, when we were all really, you know, essentially quarantining from each other, we really saw the importance of social relationships. And this really bears out in this study that was published in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health. So they looked at people who are over the age of 60. And the issue is, who do you socialize with at your age?
Mostly friends or
kids?
Yeah,
don't have kids.
Kids and some friends who don't have kids.
But you just said it right down. You just said friends who have kids, and then you said some friends who don't have kids. So in other words, they may be in the minority of relationships or not. Well, as your kids get older, those kind of go away. So in other words, you don't necessarily lose that element of friendship, but you have to continue replenishing that, because the thing about friendship is it's often a two-way street that you continue to replenish over and over again. And during the time of COVID, this became so obvious. Well, this particular study looked at survival. So it's a large study. It's the Chinese Longitudinal Health and Longevity Survey. It's been going on since 1998. So we've got really strength in numbers. And the number of years, we're looking at a huge number of participants, nearly 30,000. Their average age right now is 89. So in other words, when they started back in the day, 25, 30 years ago, they were much younger, and now they're in their 80s. And they've asked them questions. Have you had dinner with friends? Have you seen your relatives? You know, have you met with other people just over the time? Just surveys that go on that you do on a regular basis. And they looked at influential factor. They looked at sex, education, marital status, household income, fruits and vegetables, you know, what they do with their lifestyle, a whole bunch of things, because they're trying to figure out what allows people to live longer and actually be healthier. And lo and behold, they found that people who engaged in social activities on a regular basis were more likely not only to live longer, but also to be healthier when they live longer. And the difference was demonstrable. If you look up to a five-year period during the monitor period, they looked at the rates among people who never socialized, and the rates of death were roughly 18.4 per 100 people. Remember, you're dealing with older people, so roughly 18.4. But the people who socialized, it was down to 7.5. So in other words, it was literally less than half. They literally had a much longer lifestyle. There are a lot of questions that I think you can look and ask this. So do people who socialize, are they naturally healthier people, or do naturally healthier people simply socialize more? You know, kind of that chicken and egg thing. But the bottom line is, social activity makes a difference. So, I mean, you go out with your wife. You do things with your kids. You see other people.
Right.
They give you pleasure. They get rid of stress in your life. Maybe they're not all, you know, your relatives may not get rid of stress in your life.
No, they do. No,
but there is something about talking to other people that makes a difference. And I think this study really hits that home. It really makes a difference, you know. What's the first thing you're going to do when you get home tonight? You're going to see your kids, talk to your wife, right?
That's right. Yep.
You know,
definitely.
What if you went home to an empty house?
I would feel pretty lonely and isolated, I feel.
Yeah, that's right, especially on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And as we get older, that's the issue that really strikes people that are older. That's why senior centers are a boon to older people around this country. Almost every county in the country has a senior center that allows people to get together, especially when their loved one dies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're widows and widowers. I'm an older guy. I know the trees are falling in the forest. I've seen people after their friends and family that pass away. And then what happens is they often don't get up and see people as often. This study shows, get off your butt and begin to see other people. It does make a difference.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Call anytime. Leave a voicemail. Let's actually hear a voicemail now. This is a listener from Waukesha, Wisconsin.
My question is, despite all the research and good people working on this, why has there not been anything done with Alzheimer's that have any kind of results that aren't just terrifically difficult on people's systems? I thank you.
Well, there is a lot of research on Alzheimer's, and the reason is Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. You have Alzheimer's, Lewy body dementia, and vascular dementia. And there really are three entities. We cannot now really tell, can't tell the difference. You know, if somebody has an MRI scan that shows they've had multiple strokes, we can tell that's probably vascular dementia. But Lewy body and Alzheimer's, we really can't tell very well. There is a tremendous amount of research to try to find out if there's something that we can manipulate that stops this from happening, because it's a huge public health problem. So the answer is there is lots of research. There are not a lot of answers. But now let me explain something that goes on, because we might eventually find the answer. Back in 1974, a famous study got published, which was the VA study. And in the VA study, they discovered that if they treated hypertension early, they reduced heart attacks and strokes tremendously. And that's really, that was really the kickstart to the treatment of high blood pressure. Kickstart. So nowadays, people have high blood pressure. Often, most of them are on high blood pressure medications. A lot of them are not at goal, and they should be. But we have reduced stroke by 70% since the 1970s, mostly from the treatment of high blood pressure, secondarily from the treatment of cholesterol, and then smoking and diet and lifestyle. But we don't know what to do about Alzheimer's yet. There is research, and the only thing I can say is stay tuned.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's dip into the always overstuffed Zorba Pastor On Your Health inbox and take an email from a listener named Alan. Alan writes, "Dear Zorba, I have a problem that no doctor or psychiatrist has been able to help with. I had prostate surgery last year, and I'm almost sure the combination of the blood pressure medicine, statins, painkillers, sleeping pills, etc., I was taking during that time made me hallucinate and have horrible, destabilizing dreams that I think will affect my life forever.
Oh.
My dreams are mostly about spoiled rotten fish, blood, and rotten pies. The pills the doctors prescribe make me sleep and cause worse bad dreams. They all have a disclaimer that they could make it worse. No one really knows what's causing it, even though I think my blood pressure medicine is the culprit. I need help. Do you know what may cause this? And more importantly, what can I do to stop it? I listen to your show every week. Thanks for helping so many people."
Really? Well, thank you. Thank you very much. You know, that's a difficult issue. When you have parasomnias where you're sort of half awake and half asleep, they can be very disturbing. You know, he may have parasomnias. He may have sleep apnea that he doesn't realize. You want to check to see if you have sleep apnea. Go to a sleep specialist. Very important, because if you have sleep apnea and you're not in that deep sleep, that can also do it. He's right. It may be the medications he's on, not just blood pressure medications, but typically opioid medications, which you may have had post-op, can cause instead of euphoria, dysphoria as you get older. Younger people tend to be really like it and like the feeling. Older people tend to dislike it. They find it disjointed. There may be another drug you may try for sleep, such as gabapentin or pregabalin. There are a whole bunch of things that you can manipulate to try to figure out what that is. And for some people, one of the newest therapies that still is in experimental state is really psilocybin. And psilocybin, there's some really interesting research done, among other places, at University of Wisconsin, looking at psilocybin trips, but small doses of psilocybin with certified therapists, that's the theory, to go back and look at traumatic problems and try to actually solve them. And there's some very interesting provocative research that this insight may make a difference. And back in the day, they actually were doing research at the time of Timothy Leary. You've heard of Timothy Leary, right?
I've heard of him, yeah.
But not much about him, right?
I know a little bit about LSD.
Turn on, tune in, drop out. Well, Timothy Leary was a psychologist at Harvard where they were studying psychedelics to see their effect of human emotion and whether or not that would give them insight. What happened was it got totally sort of turned around and became a drug of abuse, big issues with Nixon and others. Right now, they're going back to see whether or not psychedelics may help, especially in traumatic situations like this, because clearly the surgery he had did produce trauma. He needs to see a sleep specialist to figure out what's going on.
Do you have a question or comment for the show? Post it to our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Call anytime and leave us a voicemail. But before we head out, Zorba, let's do the segment where we feature what our wonderful listeners are writing on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. You get a lot of action on that Facebook page. It's great.
And they're all wonderful.
They are.
They're all wonderful. Everyone's happy.
Happy page. Let's do the segment we call Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
All right, Zorba. We got a recipe. Someone gave us a recipe on the Facebook page, which is pretty cool. This is from a listener named Coyote, who lives in northern Wisconsin. Coyote.
Now, that is an unusual name.
Northern Wisconsin. Yeah, it's kind of vague, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Northern Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Coyote writes, I was wondering if you know about a tonic I have used. Mm-hmm. It is said to be a liver cleanse.
Ooh, okay.
I looked for info on it, but didn't find much. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if it also helps with the bowels.
Uh-huh. All right.
Here's the recipe.
Okay.
You ready?
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
Okay.
This is reverse now. I'm going to
do
the thing, and then you do the ingredient.
You're doing it. That's
okay.
Right. Go ahead.
4 tablespoons of olive oil.
4 tablespoons of olive oil.
Got to say big T.
I'm sorry. Sorry. 4 big T olive oil.
2 tablespoons lemon juice.
2 big T lemon juice.
Now, what kind of lemon juice do you use?
I either use fresh lemon juice.
You got to go fresh.
Or I use frozen lemon juice. I don't use reconstituted lemon juice.
Okay.
But the frozen is pretty good.
Yeah, it's all right. 2 tablespoons maple syrup or honey.
Okay, so 2T. I would use – what would I use? Well, I've got clover honey. I've got pumpkin honey. I only use real maple syrup, but whatever I had around. Yeah, 2 big T.
And then 1/2 cup of warm water.
Oh,
now, what kind of water,
water
do you use?
I like to go natural with my warm water. I take it out of the tap, warm it up. Okay, that's it.
By the way, I had some amazing maple syrup the other day. It was barrel aged, so it's aged in whiskey barrels.
Oh, wow. Gosh, it was good.
Oh. You could use that for this recipe.
Delicious.
But anyways,
okay.
What do you think of this tonic? What do you think of Coyote's tonic?
Well, what are we supposed to do now?
Like you mix it up. Oh, I guess there's no ingredients. He just gave us the ingredients.
Yeah, come on. What are you supposed to do?
I assume you just mix it up.
Put it in the blender. What do I think about it?
Yeah, do you think
You mean is it going to cleanse the liver?
As a tonic, yeah.
Not at all.
You don't think so?
What do you got in it? You got some sugar? What else do you have in it?
Olive oil's pretty good, right?
Olive oil's pretty good, but it's not going to cleanse anything.
It's
I think the reality is put it on your salad. Then it'll be much
healthier. It sounds like a dressing to you, huh?
It's a dressing. A little sweet. It's got everything. Doesn't have any vinegar in it. But
I thought it sounded good.
I'll put it on a salad. It's pretty good.
Will it help with the bowels? That was the other question. Not at all.
Well, I don't know. It depends. You know, you want help with your bowels, you need a little fiber. There's no fiber in there.
No fiber.
But if you put it in some Metamucil, that might be okay. Mix it with Metamucil every morning.
Top it off with Metamucil. All right. Thanks for the recipe, Coyote.
Or Miralax. You could top it off with Miralax if you want to go after your bowels.
Check out the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. And if you have a question, you can always send us an old-fashioned email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Carl.
If you missed anything during the show.
Anything.
Anything. Or you just want to stream the show online.
Stream us.
Anytime.
Anytime.
Visit us on the web.
You can. ZorbaPastor.org.
Or Facebook.
There you go.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime.
Don't forget.
Your question.
You bet.
800-462-7413. Say it one more time, Zorba.
1-800-462-7413.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis,
So
please do check with your doc.
Absolutely.
Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg.
Ba-ba-da-da.
Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran.
Ba-ba-da-da.
Great musicians. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next
Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's zorbapastor.org.